Welcome to Q&A with T&K. They've surfed the interwebs. They've contemplated, ruminated, and speculated. They've checked the teletype, and now they're ready to answer your questions. Here are your hosts, Tiffany and Kristen.
Hello, and welcome to Q&A.
With T&K, I'm Kristen.
I'm Tiffany. Welcome.
Welcome.
A couple weeks ago, we received a question about age-appropriate chores and responsibilities. And after that, I found someone lovely that I felt could really help us with this question and tell us more about what she does. So we have a special guest here today. Robin, want to introduce yourself?
Hi. My name is Robin. My last name is Einzig, which is a little odd, but no one can spell it, but that's what it is. And I run a number of online parenting communities, and I'm a child development consultant and parent coach. My business is called Visible Child.
And you have a great blog.
Thank you. And I have a great blog.
Visiblechild.wordpress.com.
That's right.
Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So,
that's going to be fun.
Yeah. Robin, how did you get into the parenting field?
Well, I've been in child development for my entire career. So that's been about 40 years, believe it or not. That's a little shocking even to me. And over that time, you know, I just served in sort of every role that you could imagine in relation to children and families. And finally, at this point in my career, I decided to focus on the part that I loved the most and that seemed to be the best fit for me. I didn't quite feel like I still had to try and do everything, but that I could narrow down and focus on what I loved to do best. And that was writing, speaking, and working with parents and families.
Excellent. Is there an age group that you focus on, or do you... Talk about the whole lifespan.
Well, it depends. I don't consider myself an expert on the whole lifespan. I certainly address the whole lifespan of children through up until they are adults. I've gained a whole new insight in the parallels between early childhood and old age through my experience of watching my mother, who is 96 and very frail, and watching the way that caregivers interact with her, and have found phenomenal parallels between the way we caregive for young children and the way we treat the elderly. So that's been quite interesting, and I never dreamed of going there, but that's been an interesting experience. My most persistent age group is really early childhood, which is sort of everything under 8, and the younger, the better. So infants and toddlers, most pronounced, then preschoolers, then older children, then adolescents. Although I have an adolescent myself, and that has made me more interested and more active in reading and engaging with families with adolescents.
Neat.
Yeah, very cool.
So how many children do you have, Robin?
One. I have one.
One. Okay. And one adolescent.
One. She's 16 and a half.
Okay.
Is she driving now?
She is.
Does that terrify you?
Terrifying. Yes. Oh, you know, it's an interesting thing. It's kind of like everything about childhood and adolescence and parenting. For me, I talk a lot with parents about corollaries. It's a big, really favorite topic of mine. That, you know, things with an 18-month-old have a corollary at 10 and have a corollary at 16. And our experience as parents when our children go off to preschool has a corollary. Everything has corollaries. And so what I just have to remind myself with her driving is that this is one of the stages of letting go. Yeah. Of not having control over what happens to our children, which is just terrifying, no matter what age they are or what that risk is. So when we send, for example, I remember when I sent my daughter off to school.
Kindergarten.
And I don't, well, she followed a kind of atypical path, so not exactly. But when I sent her off to school, she went to a very progressive private school at the very earliest stages, and then she went to public school in third grade.
Okay.
And I remember feeling really strongly that she kind of didn't know that there were people who were mean.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And it broke my heart that she was finding out that what the world was like. Yeah. Like, I had kept her sheltered in some ways, and I had had very conscious decisions about media exposure. And now suddenly she's finding out. And it's like this letting go where you have to accept. And that's, I find driving is sort of the same way, which is that, you know, she says, but I'm a really, really good driver. I'm really safe. And she is. And she is. And I always say, that is really true. And if you could go out and drive on empty roads, I would be just fine with it.
Yes. Yeah.
The problem is not that I don't trust you. The problem is everyone else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this feeling like, what if she's a new driver? What if she makes a mistake? What if she forgets to pay attention? What if she spaces out for a minute?
Right.
You know, and all those what if, they're the same at any age.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yeah. What if that happens? Yeah. Right? What if I leave my child with a babysitter for the first time and they are harsh? Like, what's going to happen? Yeah. Right?
Yeah.
But, you know, life happens. And at some point, we don't get to control what happens in our children's lives. And it is terrifying.
It is terrifying. I have 4 children of my own. I have a 10-year-old. I have 10, 8, 5. It's hard to keep track of 4 kids. 10, 8, 5, and 2.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I'm feeling some of those things definitely all the time. So,
yeah.
Tiffany, what else do you have for questions for Robin?
Let's start with this age-appropriate expectations with regards to chores.
Chores.
I can't wait to hear what you have to say, Robin.
Chores is one of my favorite topics. I actually got asked about this yesterday at a breakfast meeting that I had with some people that I'm going to be doing a workshop for where I live. And we wound up in a very similar conversation, I think. So there is my first answer, which I think I have to qualify.
Okay.
Because when people hear my first answer, they leap to a conclusion, which is not accurate.
Okay.
So my first answer is that we don't do chores in our house. We don't have chores. We don't do chores.
Okay.
When people hear that, quite predictably, and it's really interesting when I do this in front of a live audience, you know, if I'm doing a workshop, I can see people's faces. I can see the shaking heads. I can see the, oh, I bet I know what her kid is like, you know.
Oh.
Or, oh, she's one of the permissive people, right?
Can I interject and say what I would guess your kid is like?
Yeah.
I would guess that your kid is the one who volunteers to help more than anyone else.
She is. She is absolutely the one who offers to help more than anyone else. And actually, that is the thing that has been commented on the most by teachers throughout her entire academic career. When we go to parent conferences, they say, I've never met anybody like that. She's always there. Yes, that's right. Good call, Tiffany. So first of all, I would urge people, that's a very important thing to me, that when anybody says anything that sounds extreme to you like that, which it will sound extreme to some people,
right. Mm-hmm.
We don't do chores, mm-hmm.
right?
That you resist the urge to leap from a statement to a grand conclusion.
Right.
And that you instead pause and try and examine what it is or listen to what it is that I'm actually saying.
Definitely.
So, so some of it is semantics, and I am perfectly happy to admit that, right? Some people use that word chores, and don't have a negative association with it in any way. Right. And I think that if you don't have any negative association with it, then your perception, your feeling about this might be different. To me, the word chores, the language is a really important thing to me. Words are a really important thing to me. Mm-hmm. And the word chores carries with it this kind of drudgery slash obligation, yes, slash
no fun.
Things we have to do.
Yes.
You know? And I don't want to live my life that way. And I don't want my child to live her life that way. So we don't do that. Now, to be fair, we did have a few periods of time where it felt like we needed to do that. And I tried it.
Yeah.
Because it felt like, okay, this isn't working. Maybe everybody else is right, righter than I am. And let's try it.
Yeah, let it go.
We did, and it totally didn't work.
It's horrible.
Totally didn't work. So the answer, my answer, the qualification of my answer is that it is my conscious intention to raise a child who helps with whatever needs to be done because it is a joyful and a pleasant and a giving way of living together with other people, not because there are tasks that quote unquote have to be done.
Right.
I have made that conscious choice since she was very, very young. I also am admittedly, and this is not true of everyone, I also am admittedly a person who really does not mind doing things for her. Mm-hmm. I don't feel resentful. I don't feel frustrated about that. But more than anything, and this gets back to what you were just saying, Tiffany, I wrote a blog that is probably the most heavily traveled and most heavily viral of any post I've ever written. That's called Modeling Graciousness. It's on my blog. And the essence of it is that children learn by modeling. Mm-hmm. So they learn by modeling more than by anything else. Not by teaching, not by forcing, not by charts, not by assignments, but by modeling. Mm-hmm. If we hate the work that we do around the house, they will hate the work that they do around the house.
Right.
If we are relaxed about that work, they will be relaxed about that work. They learn this process by modeling. And the reason I came to this is, and really what is the essence of that post, which obviously you can read, is that it was a very high priority for me for a very young age to raise a child who is altruistic. Mm-hmm. Very, very important to me. Mm-hmm. To raise the child that you're describing, Tiffany, the one who volunteers.
Yeah.
And having worked in education for a long time, I've really seen in every classroom I've ever been in, preschool through high school, I have seen this scenario. A science teacher, let's say they did a soil experiment and there's dirt all over the floor. And the science teacher says, I could really use some help over here cleaning this up. And in every classroom, there will be one child or more who says, I wasn't over there.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was not my mess. or that was them. That was them. They should clean it up.
Yeah.
And when I have met a lot of those kids, I have been with those kids in every classroom. And when by the time my daughter was, I think, 2 or 3, I was really clear that that's not going to be my kid. I don't want my child saying that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so the answer to me in the end is that if you want your child never to say, that's not my mess, I'm not going to clean it up because that's not my mess, then we have to never say, that's your mess, clean it up.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are teaching them that you make a mess, you clean it up, it's not my job.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want her to learn that.
Right.
I want her to be helpful. Doesn't matter who made the mess.
Yeah.
So that's the long answer. The short answer is that when you have older children, because I understand was asked in the context of older children. When you have older children, then we're not talking so much about modeling these wonderful things because your kids are already old and whatever patterns you've set in place are in place.
Yes.
Right? At that point, the answer is to step back and to have a family meeting with your children. If you have decided that the way you've handled it to that point has not worked, then you lay that on the line. Here's what I thought would work, and this is what we tried, and it hasn't worked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's not about blaming anybody. It's not it hasn't worked because you're not doing it.
Yeah.
It's that it hasn't worked. It wasn't a good idea. It didn't work. Right?
Yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of stuff that goes on here, and we're all in the family, and we got to figure out a way to make this work.
Yeah.
What are your suggestions? Right? Let's brainstorm. And brainstorm in the true sense of brainstorming, which means all ideas, no ideas are thrown out. All ideas are on the table.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right? So if a kid says, well, my idea is that you do all of it. Right? And a lot of us have this reaction like, well, that's not quite what I mean. Or,
right.
Or no, that's not the kind of idea I was thinking of. And what I'm suggesting is that when a child says, well, my idea is that you do all of it, I would say, get out my paper where I'm writing down all the ideas, and I say, that's one solution.
Yeah.
One solution.
One.
One, right. That's one. That's one possibility. What else?
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
And then we meet and we figure it out and we come together on a solution and we decide what's most important. And your children are people. Maybe what's important to you in the house is not important to them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Find the things that are important to them and engage them in those things. It's a collaborative process. It's not a top-down process. It's a matter of being sort of more democratic with your children. And if you have made mistakes that have led to them becoming very resistant and resentful about chores or what the tasks that need to be done, lay it on the line. Say, you know what? This is what I would say. You know, I think I have not been the best example. Like
right.
I complain about housework and like, why would you like it if I don't like it either?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Just be upfront. They're people. Right.
Right.
None of us like it. so we have to figure out, you know, what can we do? Like, how can we make it work?
Right.
And what matters to each of us. So that's my long-winded answer about chores.
Interesting.
I love how this conversation has made me think about much more than just chores.
Yes.
It's not just about who's going to do the dishes today. It's about how are you going to be in society and do the dirty work when you get older.
Yes. Exactly.
Well, and here's like the thing I think parents with young children see, like my kids will go, they're here at home and chores are like a dreaded thing around here. And I'm listening to everything you're saying and I'm so excited to move on from that. But they go to like, they'll go to school or they'll be at preschool or whatever. And their teacher will be like, oh, they're so good. They are so helpful. And they're so this and that. It's like, where's that kid at my house? What am I doing wrong?
Yeah. Yeah. You're not doing anything wrong.
Yeah.
My daughter has, even at 16, has 101 reasons why she's going to kill me if she hears this. She has 101 reasons why she can't do the dishes at our house.
Oh, yes.
There are many of things she does do, so I'm not. It's not a complaint.
Yeah.
There are 101 reasons why she can't do the dishes.
Yes.
And about 6 months ago, she got hired to help somebody with a party. And basically what they wanted her to do was to sort of keep up with all the dishes and, you know, and she was thrilled and did it beautifully. And, you know, this is sort of a part of the, you know, we talk a lot about our children and impulse control. Parenting takes a lot of impulse control too, right? Yes. Because when she came home, I so wanted to say, well, hold on a minute. You know, if you can do dishes for 2 hours at their house, how can you not do dishes for 5 minutes at our house?
Oh my gosh.
Right? I wanted so much to say that. But you know, I think I probably did say something like it, but I said it more in playfulness. You know, yeah. Mm-hmm. Because really all you're going to get, you know what you're going to get, right? All you're going to get is the same litany of reasons she can't do it at our house. Mm-hmm. It's different. They had a different kind of sponge. They had a different kind of system. They had gloves that I like. They had this at our house, blah, blah, blah. And you're my mom. You can do it. And, you know, there were 100 reasons. And I don't really want to engage in that with her.
Right.
The reality is that's true of all people. Mm-hmm. We all behave better, quote unquote, in public and with strangers than we do with our families. All of us.
We do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't know why it should be surprising if children do that.
Yeah. Mm.
That's very true.
I love what you said about parents needing impulse control.
Yes.
I would second that for teachers as well.
Yes, absolutely. So I have a principle that I believe very deeply in, which is the value of pausing.
Yeah.
Putting some very conscious space between, conscious and intentional space between a child's actions and our response. Mm-hmm. Because it gives us time to actually resist the impulse and choose consciously what we want to say.
Right.
And it doesn't always work because no person has perfect impulse control. Sometimes we just react. Mm-hmm. But the more you practice pausing, the better you get at it. And the more you do it, the more conscious your responses get. And you're actually able to get out the response that you want to give, the one in the books or the one that, you know, that other great parent does or something. Right? You're able to do that if you pause. Because you know it, but you're not giving space for it to remember.
Right.
You're just responding from emotion. So I do work a lot with parents on, you know, just pause. Wait a second. And let your kids know you're going to do it.
Right.
Right? Mm-hmm. You can say to them that I actually talked to a parent the other day and they said, that just makes my kid mad. Because they say, you're ignoring me. You're ignoring me. Like, because they're trying to get a reaction and you're not reacting. Mm-hmm. Right? And so that makes them mad. So, you know, that's about explaining to them, you know what? Sometimes, and this is a voice I would speak to a 4-year-old probably. You know, sometimes you do something and then I answer and then later I'm not happy with the way I answered. Like it sounds too mean, or it sounds like I sound angrier than I really should have been, and or more frustrated. And I'm trying something new, and I'm going to try and wait a second so that I can figure out what I most want to say or do. Hmm. And it's not, I'm not ignoring you. I'm just pausing for a minute. And you're not only telling your kids what's going to happen, but you also are modeling for them what to do when something hard happens.
Yeah.
Right? When something happens, somebody says something mean to them, maybe they'll pause and figure out what they're going to say instead of just reacting.
Yeah.
Everything we do is modeling. So it's an awesome responsibility. Awesome in the sense of large, not awesome in the sense of desirable.
Yes, very true.
I'm getting so much out of this conversation with you. I struggle, and Tiffany knows this, and all of our listeners know this. I've said it many times that I am 100% a better teacher. This is how I feel about myself, that I am a better teacher of young children than I am a mother. Like, I come home and I'm like this crazy maniac. Mm-hmm. And I can be like engaged all day with children, young children, and be so calm and so respectful and like give them an environment where I want them to feel safe and loved and comfortable. And then I come home and it's like, it's horrible. Mm-hmm. It's no fun to live that way. And so I'm taking so much, just the little bits of pausing and thinking about what I know and just responding in a different way. And yes, I see my kids acting towards each other how I act towards them. And it's icky. So this is going to be good. I'm excited.
And the reality is that that's true for all of us. You know, mm-hmm. you got to give yourself a break about that. Other people's children are always easier.
I know, they are.
It's always easier with other people's children. You know, I spend my days in people's homes and working with people one-on-one and in groups. And, you know, I can work magic with their kids. And they think I'm like that. Oh, wow. Like, I wish I could talk like you to the kids. And I'm thinking, right, but you weren't here when I... when my own daughter pushed my buttons and I lost my mind, right? You weren't here. That's my own kid. And these are your children.
Yeah.
It's really, really different. Our children can push our buttons in a way that no one else's children can.
Right.
And you can't discount that. It matters. It's much harder task.
It is. Yeah. It is. Well, thank you. Makes me feel better.
at least you know what the things are.
I know.
Right? You're doing them.
Yeah.
Right? So at least you know what they are. That's a point in your favor.
Definitely. Well, and here's the deal, though. My husband doesn't. And it's really hard. That's like a disconnect, too, because we do things differently. And he isn't a seeker of information like I am. So he's just more willing to just live it day to day. But I'm like, I try to find solutions to the problems and he doesn't. And so that's another disconnect there, that I'm the one who's kind of in charge of figuring out how to raise our children. And he just follows along. So, and I think that that's typical for a lot of relationships too.
Extraordinarily typical.
Yes. So
in the groups that I run, the parenting groups that I run, I think there's probably, I would say, a post every day that says, how do I get my husband to ...
Yeah.
every day. You know, people do things differently. And children can adjust to people doing things differently.
Yeah.
Not everybody has to do everything the same.
Exactly.
And I think also there's a dynamic sometimes. I'm not saying this is true for you, but I think in some families there's a dynamic created when one person is more of a seeker of information, mm-hmm. where the other person feels disempowered.
Mm. Okay.
And they feel like you're, and this may not be true for you, but it certainly is mm-hmm. true in some families, that... you know, like you're constantly telling me what to do or what I'm doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And the more somebody feels like that, the worse job they're going to do mm-hmm. at parenting. And the more they're going to dig in to what comes naturally to them. And so we're actually working against our own interests by constantly trying to get spouses on board.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, let so maybe, them be themselves.
Right. Yeah. And modeling too, right? Does modeling work?
When they see it work, mm-hmm. when they see it work, you know, sometimes you have to let these things evolve. I've had those kinds of things happen and I we'll watch a parent and they'll say, my husband does timeout. I don't do timeout. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. And I don't think he should use timeout. I don't want my kids put in timeout, but he uses timeout. Mm-hmm. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think, okay. Okay. Right. That's what happens. Mm-hmm. You're not going to get him to stop using timeout by shaming him for using timeout. That's not going to work.
Right.
And sometimes if you can back off, you find that there will reach a point at which a spouse will say, I keep putting them in timeout, and they just keep doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And at that point, you have a great opportunity. You have to say it nicely, but you have a great opportunity for saying, huh, like maybe that's not working.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Maybe. And at a certain point, they might be open to realizing that in fact, it isn't working because the behavior is continuing.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And when it isn't working for them, maybe they will be interested in trying something that seems to work.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that has to be allowed to happen in its own time. Not that we should ever allow or, you know, or stand back if children are being treated, you know, abusively or too harshly. But I'm talking about finer distinctions than that, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not everything can be the way we want it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you also have to factor in the, like, development of parents and adults into that equation too, right?
Yes.
Just like you can't force a three-year-old to learn how to read.
Right.
Sometimes you have to be a parent for a while first before you figure things out.
That's right. Exactly. Yeah. It's a, you know, so much of, I saw this quote, it wasn't from me, I wish it was, about how respectful parenting, which is what I call what I do most for the most part, is not about the children. It's about us.
Hmm.
And it's not about changing children. It's about changing us. Mm-hmm. And not everybody is ready for that kind of introspection. Or, frankly, not everybody is ready to deal with their own issues from their own childhood.
Right.
And until you do, those things are going to come out of your mouth in an automatic way.
Mm-hmm.
And not everyone has, and I don't mean that as a criticism. Some of us can't tolerate the pain or what feels maybe like betrayal of our own parents. You know,
right.
If we criticize our own childhood, are we betraying our own parents who we love and who we feel like did the best for us?
Yeah.
Right. And worked really hard. And I don't want to criticize them because they did the best they could. And I love them. And they took great care of me. And they sacrificed for me. And I'm not going to speak badly of them.
Right.
Right. And, you know, getting to a place where it's possible to heal whatever it is or to shift your thinking about your own childhood in a way that doesn't demonize your parents is a journey. And that's what you reminded me of that, Tiffany, because, you know, that's not something everybody is ready for at the same time or ever.
Yeah.
Right. Right. So, and that matters. The people who do this kind of work most successfully, this kind of more collaborative, democratic kind of parenting, are people who are able to take that on. And a lot of people can't do that. I don't condemn them. I don't condemn them for it. We all have our own limits.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. All right, ladies, we're going to pause here so that we can continue this conversation about respectful parenting in the next episode, including a really excellent What Would You Do? Featuring Robin. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time on Q&A with T and K.
This has been Q&A with T and K. Thank you for listening. From serious to silly, Tiffany and Kristen are eager to answer your questions. Just email them to q4tnk@gmail.com. That's q4tandk@gmail.com. We'll be back next week with another episode. Music by Kurt Pearsall, Tiffany's sweet, sweet hubby.
This has been an Explorations Early Learning Upstairs Studio production. Oh.